Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
That was based on a true story with when Jackie Robinson was the first African-American player to play in major leagues. Of course, it was not well or greeted with open arms by many people in America, and Pee Wee Reese was an all-star and a beloved player around the country, and that actually happened, where he came over and just put his arm around Jackie Robinson as if to say, if you like me, then you got to like him, because he's my friend. And that's really kind of what we're going to be talking about this morning when it comes to what Christ has led us to do. Is it's kind of reflecting one of our values here. We call it to be a thermostat, not a thermometer. You saw there was a little boy there who was simply going to reflect whatever the culture or the crowd was doing. And so when he saw that his dad didn't like Jackie Robinson, he didn't like Jackie Robinson. But then when his baseball hero put his arm around Jackie Robinson, he kind of started rethinking and said to himself, well, maybe I should rethink what I'm doing. And in that moment, Pee Wee was a thermostat. He set the temperature for that entire stadium and eventually for the entire country. And I wanted to revisit the it factors, and this was the most natural place to start since we've been having so many air conditioning issues over the past couple weeks. You may not have noticed much if you come to the early service because we have a lot of other air conditioners. We've been leaving these doors open at night and trying to get this room as cold as possible so that way, since we had no way to cool it down after that, it would heat up, and so those who come to the 10:15 would be in here very hot. And so maybe some of y'all came to the 9 o'clock simply because you were tired of being so hot. And there's a device in the back of the room that is supposed to be a thermostat. It's supposed to actually be able to set the temperature of the room. However, the past couple weeks, it's been nothing more of a thermometer. And a thermometer just basically reflects what the temperature in the room is, but is completely powerless to do anything about it. And so we're very excited that I think we have a thermostat back there now because the air conditioning is working again. So if you're a little cool this morning, if you're a little cold this morning, I'm okay with that because it's going to be hot all day. If you wonder why we wear shorts in the summer, because it gets hot and we go over to Town Center campus and we pack up a truck a lot of times and it's a little toasty to pack up a truck in 95-degree weather. That gets back to Jesus, who was a thermostat. He would always set the mood for a room instead of reflecting it. And the whole idea of the it factors came about a couple years ago when there's something about Christianity that always bothered me. It's when you read the story of Jesus in the Gospels, people who are nothing like him love to be around him. And he attracted people from all walks of life. It wasn't like as if he just appealed to people who were just like him. He appealed to everybody. There was blue-collar people and white-collar people that followed after him. There were people of his own race and people of other races that followed after him. There were people who were religious who would come to speak to him, and there was people who were the farthest thing from religious who would want to be around him and hang out with him. People who were young, people who were old, people who were rich, who were poor. He seemed to break down every dividing line that we have. He was, if you will, the goal of America, if you will, is to be a nation without race. It's something we've struggled with over the years. It's to be one where we accept everybody. And Jesus was the leader of this. He was out at the forefront of this. There's nobody who is more radical in this area than was Jesus Christ. And there's things about him that drew people to him. And I think the problem the church has had over the years, and let me just back up, the problem I see in the church is that the church does not seem to reflect this nature of Jesus. People who are nothing like Jesus don't seem to want to be around church people. And so I was like, there's a problem or a disconnect somewhere in there that if we're supposed to be the body of Christ and non-church people don't want to be around us, then there's something we're missing that Jesus had or about him that we need to go back and revisit. And so you ask, what was it about Jesus that made people drawn to him? And that's where you say that I don't think it was that we're not teaching what Jesus taught. I don't think it's that we're not believing what Jesus believed. I don't think it's that our doctrine or theology is off, because all over the country you have people who have very good doctrine, very good theology. It lines up with everything in Scripture, yet at the same time, unchurched people do not want to be anywhere near that church. So there must be something else about it, and there must be this other thing about Jesus. The French would call it a certain je ne sais quoi. Did I pronounce that correctly? Do you know what that means?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's a great sort of thing. It's like, you know, French, oh, he has that je ne sais quoi. Oh, he must know there's something unique. It's sort of like when a doctor says he has an idiopathic cardiomyopathy. Oh, okay, it's an idiopathic cardiomyopathy. You know what that means? There's something wrong with your heart, and we have no idea what it is. But it's a diagnosis, so it sounds good. And so when you hear that, as in, they say, well, oh, he must know. No, it just means there's something about him. We're not really sure what it is. And so, you know, our hope as a church is to figure out what was it about Jesus that the world seems to be missing. What was it about Jesus that church is often missing? And so we set out to try to be a church that could reach out to people who were nothing like Jesus. And the problem with that is that the church is often made up of church people. And unchurched people don't like to be around church people. So how do you have a church full of people who go to church who aren't church people? Well, that's the same problem they had back in the first century, because there was a group, the church people in that day were the Pharisees, the Sadducees. The very name Pharisee itself means to be the separated ones. They were people who separated themselves from society because, after all, we don't want to mingle in amongst those people because they'll defile us in some sort of way. And that seems to be the pattern that the church has taken over the years. And by the way, you can't go back to the Bible and criticize anything the Jewish leadership was doing, because the modern church does all the exact same things. I think that's why God came at that point in time in history, because he looked at this and said, what the Jewish leadership is doing right now is an issue and a problem that will plague everybody who tries to follow after me and gets misguided over the centuries. It's Satan's favorite thing. He takes somebody who is trying to follow after God, and all he's got to do is tweak one thing, one degree off. And if a ship is just one degree off traveling from here to Europe, it's not going to end up in Europe. End up somewhere far different. You know that. The farther you keep going, just one degree off. And so over centuries, the church would just get one degree off, and that one degree off is what made us nothing like Jesus. And in that day and time, the people looked and they said, you know, we can't associate with people who don't believe the same things we do, or don't look the same way that we look. And so they pushed those people out. And that's the same thing the church has done. And so how do we change the mood of our culture? How do we change the temperature of society? How do we change the morals of society? How do we do that? Are we just going to reflect them, or are we going to be a change agent? And so I think we need to look to Jesus to see how it was that he did that. And if you go over to Matthew chapter 9, we're going to camp out this morning. But before we get there, you know, number one thing, for God to be able to be a thermostat, he had to be present. If you're going to be present, or if you're going to be a thermostat, you've got to be present. If you'll notice that thermostats are always in the room that you need to make sure is cool, right? That's why you put the thermostat in this room, not in some other room. When building my house, I did the entire HVAC system myself, and I've always been frustrated that every house I've ever lived in, it seemed like as if the worst planning of the entire place was the HVAC system. Well, after realizing how much math goes into said HVAC system, I understand why it's never right. Like, how many of y'all live in a house where the wrong room is cool? Anybody? Like, in my other house, downstairs was freezing cold, bedroom, hot as blazes, right? It always happened. And so I said, I'm going to make sure that the thermostat is in my bedroom. And I had HVAC people tell me, no, you don't want it there. I'm like, that's the only room I care about. It's the only room I care about. He says, yeah, but that could end up, your room could be really cold in order to get the rest of the house cool. And why is this a problem, right? They've also got new thermostats out now to solve those issues. Ecobee now has a thermostat where if your thermostat's not in the right place, it has a remote sensor that you can use. Because you've got to have a sensor in the room. You've got to be present if you're going to change the temperature of the room. You can't be separated from, like the Pharisees wanted to be, and somehow, in some way, make any impact on culture or society, on the people that you want to reach. So you've got to be present. You've got to be present. And so for Jesus, this came about when he was out in the marketplace, and he meets this guy named Matthew, who happens to be writing this book many years later, and Matthew was a tax collector. Now, in that day and time, a religious person would not talk to a tax collector. A tax collector was the ultimate sellout. The tax collector is the guy who cared more about money than he did about his own people. He cared more about money than he cared about his relationship with God. And so he was willing to sell out his relationship with God and with God's people for the sake of money. Basically, what he would do is he would go to Rome and say, I know these people, I know how much they make, and I can collect more taxes for you than you possibly could. And so Rome would say, be my guest. And so they would actually bid amongst these greedy people for who could charge the most in taxes. And of course, you know, I could tax these people 10%. Somebody else, well, I could tax them 12%. Well, I could tax them 13%. And then what they would do is they would agree to Rome to give Rome 13%, 20%, whatever it may be. Then they charge the people 25%, a little premium for themselves. And so that's how they would make money, by extorting the people. So you can imagine how much they loved the tax collectors back then. It's not like today where we like the IRS. Back then, in their day and time, they were despised especially. And so Jesus goes and he finds this guy named Matthew, and he says, Matthew, I want you to come follow me. And so Matthew, I mean, you know, moved by the moment just that Jesus would want a tax collector to be one of his followers, one of his disciples, one of his inner 12, is amazed by the thing. And the first thing he does is he's like, I want you to meet my friends. And so he invites Jesus over to his house for a party. So what do you do if you're Jesus and you get invited to a party full of tax collectors? Now, tax collectors don't have a lot of religious friends that they hang out with. They hang out with other tax collectors. And tax collectors, since they've abandoned their relationship with God for the sake of money, they do all kinds of wild and crazy things that don't include God. And so there's other people there who have very loose morals and have no morals whatsoever. That's the kind of party that Matthew would attract if he were to throw a party. And so if you're Jesus, what do you do? Do you go to this party? As a pastor, I'm confronted with that question a lot. When I get invited over someplace, do I go or not? If you ever wonder why I haven't come over to your house, maybe now you know. Just kidding. But I have been invited to certain places, and I'd have to ask them a question. I have to ask myself the question is this a place I can go? Can I go there? Can I be a part of this or not? And I have to go back to Jesus, and you see that Jesus loved to go to parties, and he didn't care who was throwing them. He was going to go to that party because he went there with a different mindset in mind. And he knows, first of all, you've got to be present in order to have an influence on the people. You can't have an influence on the people from afar. You have that party. I'll pray for the people who are there and get convicted. No, he wanted to be there to be an influence. And you see, Jesus being there, he was going to be a thermostat when he walked in the room, not a thermometer. And I think the first question you got to ask is, if I go to this party, am I going to be a thermostat or a thermometer? Am I going to be influenced by the people there, or am I going to be an influence when I'm there? If I go there, will I compromise my morals, or will I call people to a different way of life? When I get asked the question, why don't you do this, or why don't you do this, what will my answer be? Will I sheepishly go, oh, you know, not tonight, it's just not for me, or, you know, I'm taking a night off from that. What will you do? Or will you stand up for what you believe or what you feel is right? I remember years ago, it was a Halloween party I was invited to. It was one of those Halloween parties where, I don't know how to say this in a church. Why is it that every girl's costume is always like, you're going to be a dirty nurse, you're going to be a dirty pirate, you're going to be a dirty princess, you're going to be a dirty Disney character? You know what I'm saying? It's like, if you go to the costume store, all the women's costumes are always dirty something, or whatever you want to say of it, right? And so it was one of those kind of parties. It was like, do you go to this or not? And it was a question I had to, you know, wrestle with all of these things over. And, you know, the question was, is what's going to be your mindset in going? Are you going there to look at costumes, or are you going there to be an influence of some way, shape, or form? What would be your plan going in? And see, for Jesus, he had a plan going into a party like this. He knew who he was, he knew what he believed, and it wasn't going to be compromised. And you see, there's this issue that we have, we struggle with. Like, we come across verses like this. Like, over in 1 John chapter 2, verse 15, it says, do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in them. Okay? So do not love the world or anything in the world. Then you flip over, the same guy, John, writes over in John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he sent his one and only son. So which is it? Like, one hand, it's like, don't love the world or anything in it. And then God's like, well, I love the world. Well, wait a minute. If I love the world, then I'm not in a relationship with you. But you seem to have this great relationship with the world. How's this go? And that's where we struggle with these things. Like, you know, how is it that I can love somebody, but I'm not supposed to love them? What is this really? Well, the word world in the Bible is used in two ways. Sometimes it's used to talk about the values of the world, the popular groupthink of the world, the morals of the world. And that's where he's saying, don't love that. Don't love those morals. Don't love those values. Don't love those, it's a dog-eat-dog world. You got to look out for number one. You're going to die soon, so live it up right now. You only got one shot at life, so it doesn't matter what you do. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. That kind of mindset. But also when he talks about the world, he talks about the people in the world. And God says, I love the people in the world. Just don't love the values in the world. And you see, this whole concept that you could love the people but not the values is not something that our world even understands at all. Because they will look at you and say, if you don't love our values, then clearly you don't love me. And it's sort of a litmus test that goes out there. And they have no place for a Jesus who would show up at a party like this. Because Jesus shouldn't show up at a party like that because you disagree with the values. If you disagree with the values, then you shouldn't be there because clearly you don't love these people, you don't want to be around them. And they didn't have a box for Jesus to fit in. And my hope is that for you as a church, that you would not be a part of that box that says, I've either got to accept your values and accept you, or I've got to reject you and your values. Could you have a relationship with people where you love people, but you have a different value system? Is that possible for you? And you see, for Jesus, that's where he was. That was where he lived every day. And when the religious leaders saw this, they asked his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? Why would he do that? Why would he go there? And if you know, what ends up happening is that Jesus gets his reputation. Just a couple chapters later, in chapter 11 of Matthew, it says, the Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they said of him, yeah, he's a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and the sinners. See, he got a bad reputation for hanging out with him. Are you willing to get a bad reputation because of the people you associate with? Now, keep in mind, I'm talking about a bad reputation amongst church people, not amongst non-church people. It was the church crowd that looked at him and said, oh, you know, those people at that church, they can't be following God because they blank, 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 or because this person or this person goes to church with them. And so with Jesus, he didn't care about what the church people thought about him. He was going to love people and call them out of where they were at. He was going to invite them into a new relationship with him. But he was going to be there and he was going to be present. He wasn't going to let somebody's past or their sin or their values dictate whether or not he could be a friend of them. And for some people, they struggle with this as Christians. And my hope for you as a church is that you'd be able to love people wherever they're at. That you would seek to be a thermostat in their life, not a thermometer. And the question, of course, for you always comes back is, can you be their friend? For some of you, you have issues that you haven't dealt with. And because you have issues that you haven't dealt with, you can't go to that party. Because if you go to that party, you're not going to be a thermostat. You're going to go there and you're going to reflect every value in the room because you haven't dealt with that yourself. You still struggle with lust and you can't go to that Halloween party because it's going to drive you crazy. You still struggle with alcohol addiction and you can't go there and hang out with him because if you do, you're going to be doing the luge thing where you funnel alcohol in your mouth and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I've been to your parties. I know what happens. When God was calling out to Jeremiah, he says to them, he says this, Jeremiah 15:19, if you speak good words rather than worthless ones, you'll be my spokesman. You must influence them, but do not let them influence you. Do your standards change when you're around certain people? Does the way that you treat your husband or your wife change when you're around certain of your friends? I remember I had this issue with Melissa years ago. There was like this group of girls she would hang out with, and whenever she'd hang out with them, she would come back like a brat. It was just like the most frustrating thing. Like, she was sitting there one night eating some ice cream, and I said, oh, can I have a bite? Get your own ice cream. I'm like, you've been hanging out with those girls again, haven't you? And it was noticeable. You see that with your kids sometimes. They hang out with certain kids, and they come back and they're brats, right? And you can't hang out with those kids. Why? Because if you can't hang out with them and be an influence with them, but you're going to be influenced, it's not a good place for you to be. So do your values change? Does your attitude change when you're around them? Do you regret things that you do when you're with them? Are they more or less likely to follow Jesus because of the time you spent with him? You see, for Jesus, he got an invitation to that party, and he went there because he was going to use the invitation of the party to invite them into a relationship with God, to invite them into a new life, to invite them into a different experience in life, to invite them into a relationship with him. And if that's your mindset when you go, it changes everything about it. And so basically what we're saying is you got to be present. You've got to see people differently. He went there and he saw the opportunity differently. He had a different vision when he went there. Basically, he had a plan. You see this, on hearing this, Jesus says, it's not the healthy you need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy or love, not sacrifice. For I have not come to call the righteous, but the sinners. He's saying, listen, I'm here with a purpose. I'm here with a plan. I'm here for a reason. I'm here so I can be a light in a dark world. That's what, after all, what we're called to be. We're called to be salt in the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, it's not good for anything. If you're going to go to that party and you're not going to do something to preserve it or protect it or bring them in a relationship with God, then you shouldn't be there. If you're going to have those friendships, then you're not going to do anything to call them into a relationship with God, then you shouldn't be there. For many of you, I hear some of you all want me to. You're like, oh man, I just wish you could be at work with me. I'm like, no. God placed you there so that you could be salt and light there. He hasn't given me your gifts. He hasn't given me your talents. He hasn't given me your access. He's given you that gift. He's given you that talent. He's given you that access into people's lives. They're stuck with you on a ship for 6 months. Remember what Mordecai says to Esther? For who knows, but you've been called to this place and this position for such a time as this. Maybe the whole thing's a setup on God's part. You know, that's how Paul saw his life. Paul would get chained up to a prison guard. And the prison guard thought that he was there to guard Paul. But Paul was like, no, you're stuck with me for the next 6 hours. I know how long your shift is. You can't go anywhere because you're chained to me. So guess what? I'm going to tell you about Jesus. I'm going to tell you about why I'm in chains. I'm going to tell you about why I'm here. And it says, as a result, the name of Jesus was known throughout the entire guard. Everybody knew if you were going to spend 6 hours with Paul, you were going to spend 6 hours hearing about Jesus. They knew it because he looked at his life as it was being on mission. He was there for a reason. He was going to change the thermometer of the people. Remember when I was in college, I was in a fraternity. And every year, every semester, you would have a quota as a member of the fraternity. You have to go and find somebody to recruit to be a part of the fraternity. And so I teamed up with one of my best friends at the time. And we were like, all right, we kind of mapped it out how we're going to do this. And he's like, you know, there's a guy from my high school who I think would be perfect. I was like, okay, what's his name? So we got his name. His name was James. And so we looked up on a registry, figured out he was going to be in Smith Hall. So we went down to Smith Hall looking for James so we could recruit him to be in the fraternity. So we're walking around, and finally we're just like walking up and down every hall of this dorm room on move-in day, freshman move-in day. And finally we find him, and we're just like walking down, and Troy's like, yeah, that was him. So we walk past, and then we kind of walk back and just kind of keep walking back and down in the hallway. And then eventually James looks out, and he sees Troy. He's like, Troy! Troy's like, James, what are you doing here? And he's like, yeah, we're just here helping people move in. You need any help? He's like, yeah. And so we're sitting there, and somewhere in the midst of it, James goes, I can't believe there's thousands of people at the school, and here you are. And Troy kind of looks at me and goes, yeah, what are the odds? It was all a setup. The whole thing was a setup. We were there for one reason and one reason only. We were on a mission. We were on a mission to find him and get him to join the fraternity, which he did. Now, was his life better or worse because of our mission that day? It's a perspective answer, I guess. What if you saw your life every day in the same way? That you were on a mission every day. Maybe you don't know the person's name, maybe you do. Maybe for some of you it's, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to work out 3 times a week. And when I go to this gym, my goal, my mission, is to find somebody that I can lead into a relationship with Christ someday. When I go on this deployment, my mission is to find somebody that I can lead into a relationship with Jesus Christ and disciple them over the next 6 months. When I'm stuck in line at Walmart or somewhere, my mission is going to be to see how I can share the love of Christ while I'm in that line. I can either gripe and complain, or I can use it as an opportunity to lead them into a relationship with Christ. As Jesus finishes out this passage, it says towards the end of the chapter, Matthew chapter 9, verse 36, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. You see, Jesus could go to that party with a missional mindset because he saw the people there differently than other people saw them. The religious people saw them as people who were unloved by God and beyond hope. The partygoers saw each other as people who were just as debased and messed up as they were. Jesus saw the people there as people who were helpless, people who were harassed. They looked at their life and they said, you know, I know why they're drinking and drowning their sorrows, because they don't know any other way. I know why they have a sex addiction, because they don't know any other way. I know why their spending is out of control, because they don't know any other way to deal with the hurt and the pain of life. They were harassed and they were helpless. They were like sheep without a shepherd. They didn't have a guidance. They didn't have a direction. And he was on a mission to be a shepherd to them. And then he turns to his followers and he says this. And he says to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. So ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into the harvest field. God needs people who are willing to see their lives. I think that's telling me I need to wrap it up. Just kidding. There's this like demon in our lights that just kind of like discos every day. And sometimes they just shut it off, whatever. But he ends out and he says, listen, I'm on mission to seek and to save the lost. I see there are people who are hurting. They're not people who have, you know, evil thoughts in their heart. They're just simply people who are trying to cope with life and they don't know how to do it. And this is how they've gone about it. And it's not healthy and it's not productive. And what God needs is people who are going to come alongside me, who will be thermostats everywhere they go, workers who will go out into the field and see themselves and their lives as being on mission. Because the harvest is plentiful, but the people who are willing to see their lives as though they're on mission are few. They need to know that this life is about nothing more than having a loving relationship with Jesus Christ that they'll enjoy for all eternity. Because right now they're living for the moment. I need to bring them, invite them in to eternity. Would you join with me as we pray? Father, so many things in life, it's easy to see them as an inconvenience. But every inconvenience that you're faced with in Scripture that I read about you, Jesus, you saw it as an opportunity. You went to a party and it was an opportunity. Another time you're at somebody's house for a formal dinner and a woman crashes the party and you see it as an opportunity. Years later, you'll see a tax collector up in a tree looking to get a glimpse of you and you see it as an opportunity. Father, may we be able to see with your eyes that so many things that we look at as an inconvenience, people that get on our nerves, people who are coping with life the only way they know how, and it's destructive to them and to us as well. May we see this as an opportunity to change their mood, to change their vision, to change the temperature of the room to one that could lead them into a relationship with you. We ask these things in your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.